Thank you. Thank you, and good morning, and thanks for joining us here for Amber's presentation this morning. I'm going to start out with something a little different here. You can see my little cartoon on our opening slide here. This is a bit of a story about, you know, the famous fable of the tortoise and the hare. And in that, the moral of that story, of course, is that sometimes slow and steady wins the race. And I think what you'll see with this resource, it doesn't have the characteristics of high deliverability, but it's offset with consistency and very, very good economics. So just skipping through here, Amber is, as we said, focused on this unconventional resource in the CBM area. And really our goal here, our intent has been to build a coal bed methane type franchise. It does have other exposure, but it's certainly anchored by the Horseshoe Canyon coals in Alberta. We've grown our production base through both strategic acquisitions and drilling, and we'll continue to do that going out into the future. We have other exposures, other coal bed methane type plays. The biggest one, of course, is the infamous Mambo resource play, which was very popular back in about 2005. We still have a good exposure to that play. It suffers from, in this kind of a gas price environment, people aren't really pursuing it directly, but there has been a lot of work done on it. We think that a lot of the work that's been accomplished in multi-stage fracking will come to play on the Mandel coal sometime in the future, and we may see that play regenerated. In addition to that, we have spent a little bit of time in the last year just looking at some international opportunities, and specifically in areas like India. So this type of expertise in the area of coal bed methane, as you develop resources, can be very transferable across a multitude of type plays. Recently, we just completed a $20 million acquisition, or a $20 million equity raise, I should say, and that closed here last week and gives us about 75 million shares outstanding. Our bank debt, net bank debt at the end of that raise is estimated at about $78 million, and our lines are now set at about $92 million. So we've got some room there and some cash in the bank, and we're about to move forward with some drilling programs. Again, it's been a tough year, obviously, from a gas point of view, but we think now as we go into the winter, we're expecting a bit better time there. 55% of our stock is owned by three major shareholders, two private capital guys, and a large hedge fund out of the U.S. So just a quick little update. We really sat on our hands most of 2009, limited our capital expenditures to about $5.5 million, very little drilling. We did some non-core asset dispositions. We did have a few conventional assets included in our Cordero acquisition. Most of those are now gone. We've sold off about $6 million worth of assets. In addition, we bought back some royalty interest and some land acquisitions to the tune of about $4 million. One of the things that I think shows the value of this type of an asset is its production stability. If you look at, we just reported our third quarter production at about 24.5 million a day. And compare that to what we reported in the first quarter, just over 27 million a day. We sold about 1 million cubic feet of gas a day over that time frame in terms of the non-core assets. So when you look at the actual underlying assets with minimal capital expenditures, a very, very low decline rate, and that's the nature of these Horseshoe Canyon CBM wells. We will start to ramp up our activity. In fact, we have two rigs, I think, as of today in the field, and a third one will join it next week. We're planning to drill 22 net wells here before the end of the year. And spend about $9 million. We think that'll bump us up about somewhere in the order of about $2 million a day plus to get our production growth back on the back on track. We have some hedges going into the winter just to support that drilling program so that we can ensure that we're properly funded as we go through the next few quarters. Looking out into 2010, again, on the assumption that we've got reasonable gas prices, in this example here, $6 MCF gas prices, we would estimate our cash flow to be about $30 million. And with that, reinvesting that cash flow, we could drill about 60 to 65 net wells and then put the company back on track in terms of a production growth. We think we can be relatively steady in that 15 to 20% growth rate as we go out into the future. So looking out to the end of the year, exiting somewhere in the order of 29 to 30 million cubic feet of gas a day. We still need to work on our balance sheet a bit more, and so we're targeting to have our net debt somewhere in the $80 million range by the end of the year. When we look at that, just looking at it today with that $6 gas price, we're starting to get back to a level that is a bit better at about 2.5 times debt to cash flow level, but we would like to see that continue to drop as we go out into the future. You know, we had a pretty good track record going into this the financial crisis. If you look at how we grew this company, really from 2005, we originally started out actually as a Mannville resource play and then converted over to this Horseshoe Canyon play. We grew our production from just over 2 million a day to almost 28 million a day by the end of 2008. That growth was accomplished both on an absolute basis and on a per share basis, and the reserves grew at the same time. Unfortunately for us, one of our best transactions, or fortunately, I think we still think of this transaction as being very, very important to the company. We acquired Cordero last summer and closed that on September 5th. And I think it was September 13th when Lehman Brothers collapsed and really the financial crisis was upon us and really didn't give us an opportunity, first of all, to get after these assets and work them the way that we wanted to and really to show the market what we had accomplished and what we were able to do. But having said that, it still was a very major transaction for us. It almost tripled our size and on a go-forward basis gives us the opportunities that we have to go forward with. So I just want to talk about a little bit about the Horseshoe Canyon coal bed methane production profile here. If you look at it from an industry point of view, it's grown from virtually zero to about 600 million cubic feet a day here over the last over the last 5 or 6 years. It did probably, like everything else, take a little bit of a pause here in 2009. It'll be interesting when we update this graph to see how flat that curve actually looks like, and that's with a backdrop of this is out of Alberta. All of this production is out of Alberta, and of course we know in Alberta the provincial production has gone completely the other direction, down a couple BCF a day over that time frame. So it's a very large part of what's going on these days in Alberta, and we think we'll continue to grow. Ourselves, the resource is well defined in terms of its aerial extent. We are one of one of the top five drilling operators on the play. If you look at the combined effort of both Ember and Cordero, but it's really dominated by the majors. It's interesting to note that Encana announced the other day with their 2010 budget that they're going to allocate, I think it was around $350 million to this asset, and making it one of the larger commitments that they have, certainly in Alberta. It didn't go into the oil company. It actually stayed in Encana, the gas company, and the resource development. So I think that speaks well to the economics of this play to Encana as well. We've got three major areas that we operate in: our Acme area to the west of the play, and Bashaw, which we acquired through the Cordero acquisition, and our original property, which is located over in Fenwick Valley. The thing with the Horseshoe Canyon coal, just to give you a little idea what it looks like, what we're doing, it's fairly simple in all of the areas. It doesn't really vary through those three different areas other than the depth and the gas concentration. But typically we're dealing with, you know, upwards of 10 to 15 separate coal seams that we frack and treat. And this schematic here gives you an idea of where those are located in their depths. You can see they're fairly shallow. And in some areas, particularly the Bashaw area, we also have the advantage of drilling through conventional zones, Belly River zones mainly, and those add to our economics as we go through the piece. It's important, in this gas kind of environment that we've been in, and I think we can expect the volatility to continue. So cash costs are a big part of what you have to focus on. This is our historical cash costs. I've updated this to the end of the third quarter. And you can see that we've been fairly successful in keeping our cash costs low and continuing to make those lower just here to the end of the third quarter, something just less than $2.50 an MCF. And the only thing that's growing on that chart is our financial costs, which are a combination of higher levels of debt, obviously, but also the spreads charged to us by the banks have been increasing through that piece. But the rest, operating costs, transportation, and G&A have all been on a downward trajectory path. And then when we add to that the other piece, which is your capital costs and what it takes you to, so your cash rates plus your capital costs kind of gives you the idea of what your kind of break-even number would be. You can see here also very successful in continuing to drive down those cash costs, somewhere in about the dollar range if you look at the average between our two main areas that we're active in these days, which is Acme and Basha. And so you add that to the 250, there's your break-even gap cost for us. Our cost structure is somewhere around 350, and MCF is sort of a break-even proposition for us. You know, we have had success, you can see over the time from 05 when we first started, and this is a reflection of both Ember's success in getting costs lower, but also the industry's adapting and developing the technology to continue to complete these wells as cheap as they can. We don't think we're quite done. We're going to try in our current program that we're working on right now. We're going with some case drilling, and we think that could shave some additional costs off of what we're already forecasting here for 2009. And so I think it's important in terms of your approach here to reduce your costs and not just relying on sort of a depressed service sector. We think our costs are going to remain low even when things get heated up again, because we've actually developed different techniques to achieve some of these cost savings. So we put that together, give you an idea of how our properties stack up. Clearly, Basha is our most prolific and economic range, but this graph is a little misleading. At $4 there, we're starting, you know, the Acme property starts just under 25% rate of return, and where you can see the Basha is somewhere in the sort of 35-40% rate of return, but very, very robust economics in a reasonable gas price environment, which is the sort of that, we think that $6 to $8 gas price is what's going to be required to really have the gas industry in North America drill enough wells to support the supply required. So as we move out into that, even our FEM property becomes reasonably profitable at about 25% rate of return. But in this environment, clearly we're going to concentrate on the top two lines as we go forward. One of the things that I think that will hopefully we'll be able to see this here in the coming year. You know, we had the new royalty reform, the new royalties put in place in 2009 in Alberta, and that happened at the same time that the price of natural gas collapsed. So we really haven't seen the implications of that really in terms of our numbers, both ours and others. But I think what you're going to see when we go back into that $6 to $8 gas price range, that you will see the revenue advantage that we have from this asset base. We, unlike most in the changes to the royalties, benefited from that because of the low productivity nature of these wells. You know, our typical wells initially produce, you know, maybe 100, 150 MCF a day, but on an average productivity basis in that 100 MCF a day range, we really attract the lowest royalty rates you can get in the province of Alberta. When you compare that to the higher productivity wells, and I say that higher, really not that high, 500 MCF a day, you're pretty much at the maximum rates, you're going to see a very, very large revenue advantage to this asset base as compared to the more conventional or higher productivity unconventional wells as well. You know, $11 to $17 a BOE is equal to most people's cash costs, so we think that, that will become more evident as we get into this better gas price environment. I didn't talk much about the credit, the drilling credit programs available to us in that previous slide, but we do get those. The reason I didn't talk much about them is because we don't pay a lot of royalties to begin with, so to collect those royalties, those credits, you have to pay royalties, but we will get some royalty benefit out of that. We will actually generate some excess credits that we may be able to sell down the road, but a typical well for us is about a close to 1,000 meters, so we would earn about $200,000 worth of credits, which translates at our 50% recovery rate, about $100,000 benefit back on the drilling side. And when you consider, it only costs us $125,000 to drill that well. We're really getting a substantial credit back on the royalties on the drilling side of it as well. But we drill 10 or 15 wells, and we'll max out in terms of our own current royalty position. So unless we find a market to sell that to, which we certainly will look for, well, not all of our wells will achieve that credit. So I don't really put it into the economics there, but it is an added advantage for us. So, as I said, this asset base is really about long-term production. The benefit here is that we really don't drill dry holes. We've got over 450 producing wells to date, and we had one junked well a couple of years ago where we got into some fresh water, so we just decided it was easier to abandon it than it was to try to fix that. So we essentially drill with 100% success rate. Our results are very, very predictable, and I'll show you in a bit here a production curve of all of our results and the average of those results, and the variation is very, very small. What we have here is a very large inventory of locations to drill. A lot of them are actually included in our reserve report. You can see here about 450-plus locations, and when you go down through the proved, probable, and possible categories, you see most of those are actually included in the reserves. We think in a $6 to $8 gas price environment, you'll see our level of activity ramp up. We'd like to drill about 300 of those locations or so over the next 3 or 4 years, and if gas prices can remain consistent over that time period, we should be able to accomplish that. By 2013, we'll be producing somewhere in the 40 to 45 million cubic feet a day just from our organic growth. This is long-term production. There's only about half of our existing resource base on production, and as I said, we want to continue to develop that. One thing here I just want to point out, from a 51-101 perspective, reserves are classified based on distance from existing production. You can see the proven less than a mile, probable sort of a half to 1 mile distance, and then anything beyond that, 1 to 1.5 miles gets possible categories, and then beyond that would be just an unbooked location. As I said earlier, we haven't drilled a dry hole here, so in our view, there really is no difference between a proven and probable and possible reserve other than the cost to pipeline out to get to that reserve. So there's really little risk differentiation in any of those categories. This graph here shows you our production history. You can see we have some wells here now out over 5 years, so we're quite confident in terms of recoveries and production history on these wells. This is the average of all those wells in those areas taken back to time one, and then just their production profile. So very, very consistent production profiles. You can see the differences between the three areas. Really, it's a function of depth and gas in place that produces those different productivity rates and their ultimate recoveries. As I said, we pretty much know what we're going to get when we go to drill a well. And then lastly, I'll leave you with this thought. As I said earlier, you know, we've talked a lot about the other unconventional plays out there, which have larger capital components to them and then have quite a different production profile associated with them. What I've done here is just taken a typical Montney well that was out of, I think it's a BC-type Montney well, with its royalty rates and so on and so forth, and I don't include all of the short-term incentives that they have in here. I think it has about a 28% royalty rate. And I've said, well, let's just take the same amount of capital on equivalent basis, how many of these Horseshoe Canyon wells could we drill, and then just take our production profile I showed you earlier and put it on a map and see what that looks like. And you can see, actually, an area like Bashaw will actually beat that productivity for the same amount of money. And all of the other two areas, Acme will cross over within the first year and a half or so. And Fenn, yeah, sure, that takes a while, but all three of those areas will produce significantly more gas over their life than that Montney well will. But the other thing to note here, too, is that the squiggly lines are our actual production. So we're not guessing at where that corner is on that high decline rate down through those initial years. We actually know that. So again, a lot less risk to that ultimate recovery on those particular investments. So lastly, I do think there's a value proposition here. I mean, certainly Ember was discounted heavily because of our financial leverage. We've taken steps to correct that in the marketplace. We do think that if, as an investor, you're interested in a an upside case to natural gas prices, we represent some value proposition there for you because we already have those reserves. Those resources are identified and recognized. And so if you were to run a typical net asset valuation, you will see that we're still trading at a fairly significant discount to that valuation. And as I said earlier, those possible probable categories in terms of reality, there's very little difference in the risk profile between those. So even if you did want to risk some of those, you're still going to see a fairly reasonable value proposition there. Okay?
Maybe one quick question for Doug. Doug here. I see now we've got 5 years of history on your production curves. How are they holding up kind of based on your internal estimates and maybe a, you know, your third-party reserve engineers as well?
I think if you look at our history, I mean, that's not a difficult line to draw off the end of the actual data there. And if you look at that history of how the engineers have approached that over the years, each year we just sort of generally get more or less positive revisions because you're taking, they tend to draw straight lines. The reality with what coal bed methane is, it's desorbing that gas. And so as you continue to reduce pressure in those well bores, it continues to desorb that gas. And so it flattens out and flattens out. So our experience has been generally positive revisions. I'm not saying we're going to get a huge positive revision this year, but you're certainly not at risk of the other direction, that's for sure. And so really for us, our reserves are going to be a function of how many reserves do we put into the proof category and the probables, and everything kind of moves up the line, and we continue to meet that that kind of a production profile. So it should be pretty good.
Okay, thank you very much, Doug.